you must also come to terms with your perspective on ancestry and what trauma you carry from that ancestry. And then the work is to, you know, undo that at a daily basis. This is why the moon is so important, because she's giving you the opportunity to integrate those shadows in the light and bring healing into your experience.
You're listening to the Feed Your Wild podcast, a conscious lifestyle show about all things nourishing for your body, mind, and soul. I'm Vanessa Rodriguez, and join me for candid conversations with changemakers, exploring health and wellness, food as medicine, intuition and spirituality, and nature-based practices that will transform your health and feed all parts of your wild self. Hello there. Welcome back to Feed Your Wild. If you are new here, I'm so glad you arrived and found us. I'm Vanessa Rodriguez, functional nutritionist, Akashic Soul Record reader, and intuitive nourishment guide. Today, we have a beautiful interview with Juliana Luna. Luna is many things, which she will tell you more about. But what I love about Luna and her work with the Aluna method is that she is so clearly on a soul mission to rewrite and reweave stories. She's bridging people together and allows their own stories to bloom. In her work, Luna brings forth to our contemporary world the creative power present in inhabiting our bodies with confidence, awareness, and compassion. One of the themes that has been popping up this year in 2021 and in last month's March's Akashic Soul Record reading for the collective tuning into the Feed Your Wild podcast, there is an invitation here for all of us to inhabit and reconnect, re-know our bodies in a very real way, in a sensual way. And when I think about the word sensual, to me, it's an incredibly expansive and permissive word and energy. It brings me back to all of my senses and remembering that we have all of these senses, whether it's the five senses that we typically may think about of our bodies. So smelling with our nose, seeing with our eyes, touching with our skin, tasting with our mouths and our tongue. But there are so many other senses that are part of our sensorium that we can awaken. And one of the things that I have found incredibly helpful as a person who doesn't always feel rooted or grounded in my body, which I'm sure that many of you may also feel this way. I tend to float up. I feel very connected in crown chakra and in journeying to other levels. But staying in this body is not the easiest thing for me to do. And of course, it is incredibly natural for us to do so. So when we find that we have a difficult time in connecting and rooting with our bodies, of course, this may often be due to trauma that we experience, that of our own, but also that of our family and ancestors. So there's that aspect, but there's also our cosmic predisposition and proclivities, right? So for example, while we all have all of the elements and we have all of the signs in our birth chart, of course, we might have more energies like planetary influences occupying certain areas, certain signs. So for myself, I don't have any planets that in my natal chart are in earth signs. Now, of course, I have earth signs in my natal chart. Everybody does. And We have transits happening all the time with all the planets. So we always have opportunities to experience all the different flavors that the cosmos have for us. But what I have found as a person who does not have natally a lot of major influences in my earth signs is that it's been a constant reminder and practice to root and to stay in my body. Hence my company's name, Wildly Rooted, which literally was an epiphany for me that this was a kind of like a soul mantra that supported me in remembering to root to myself, to this earth, to Mama Earth, to my ancestors and such. So back to the sensual experience, a practice that is really helpful for me is to commune with life, with foods, with plants, with people, with nature, with even electronics in a more sensual way. And how game-changing it can be when we really meet things with that kind of presence. And that's one of the things that really struck me about Luna and her work was how wonderfully sensual it is. A previous guest, Erica Rose Santoro, which I'll link up our conversation in the show notes, introduced me to Luna's work. And so when I began to get to know Luna's work a bit more and listen to her teachings on the Aluna method, the African-centered framework for self-awareness that she has birthed and continues to develop and grow, I knew I wanted to have her on to speak more deeply into this sensual experience, this embodiment, through our connections with our womb, with the moon, the power of our periods. And from a Yoruba perspective, one that isn't talked about much and yet holds so much wisdom. In this episode, we talk about Luna's experience in childhood in Brazil and her perennial search for home, how spirit and her had their own language through dance. You'll hear about what is the Aluna method, how Luna came to create and develop the Aluna method, and her pilgrimage to Africa, her ancestral homeland, and the powerful initiation and remembrance that Luna experienced in connecting with her ancestors. Luna shares about the orishas, the embodiment of nature's forces. Luna touches on the many layers of grief that she touched in connecting with her ancestors and her manifesto, paying back in service of her ancestors and rebuilding their narrative to integrate the wisdom teachings that we so need today. Luna talks about why the moon is so important in our healing, growth, and integration, and the power of our periods and our period as the ultimate decolonization teacher. I love Luna's perspective on very common challenges that might be experienced in the reproductive center, the emotional body connection, and the sovereignty in honoring our cycles and claiming the space that we need, especially in today's world. I was inspired by this conversation, and I trust that you will be too. So here we go with Luna. Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Feed Your Wild. Today, we have Yemisi Juliana Luna, and she's on a journey as a multidisciplinary artist, leader, mentor, and narratorial creator whose mission is to empower women through movement, ancestral awareness, and intuitive knowledge. Luna is from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, currently resident of Brooklyn, New York. She's a 2020 fellow at the More Arts Socially Engaged Artists Initiative in New York City. And in May 2015, she was invited to go on a trip to reconnect with her ancestral roots, where a DNA test revealed that her ancestors come from Nigeria, more precisely the Yoruba Nation. Through her studies and research, Luna created the Aluna Method, an African-centered framework for self-awareness. It is a system for holistic understanding of our emotional bodies through a linear perspective, using Brazilian Yoruba philosophy as a prism. Luna, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me here, Vanessa. I'm so excited to share some of what I've been learning with you.
Yes, I'm so excited to learn what you've been learning. And I first discovered your work through Erica Rose Santoro, who I had on the show.
Beautiful Rose.
Oh, she's so beautiful, wonderful soul. She and I spoke about decolonizing creativity and really conspiring for collective liberation on the podcast. It was an incredible conversation. And I learned about you through her, and I was like, oh my goodness, how have I not heard of you before? Like, your work is so beautiful, and on your page and the way that you move as well, it's so inspiring. So I knew that I had to have you on. So once again, yeah, I'm so wonderful for our sisters to bring us together.
Yes.
Well, I would love to start off with first, I'd love for you to describe what it is that you feel you do or that your work encapsulates. And I know we're going to get more into it, into the nuances of it. But when somebody asks you, you know, like in the elevator on the street, I know sometimes it could be a little interesting. What do you usually say?
It depends on my mood sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I'm a scientist. Or I say, oh, I'm an artist. Or I say, oh, I'm a magician. Mm-hmm. Or I say, I'm a lunatic. I have many ways of describing myself depending on my moods. And sometimes I don't even say anything at all because I'm like, why do I have to define myself? Ugh, you know? Mm-hmm. There's so much freedom for us creative creatures. And I feel like more and more there's this need for expansive exploration. It's like, I want to be someone today and someone else tomorrow. And I want to also embrace who I was yesterday. And, you know, all of those beings come together in this present moment. And there's so much to share always. It's just a question of how open we are, right, for that, and how open we are for the multiplicity and the infinity of who we are. So, yeah, I love feeling that infinity within me and embracing it and being more comfortable in it.
Yeah, and I feel that so many folks, especially women, don't feel that way, at least initially. Like, it takes a lot of work of undoing and releasing and shedding. And sometimes I feel it can even get exhausting. And so I love how your work really looks at these innate rhythms within each person. And like, we can take our time in becoming ourselves.
Yeah.
Our own time. I'd love for you to describe a little bit about how you came to the Aluna Method. Before we describe like what it actually is, I'm curious about your journey. Like, what even got you interested in doing this work?
Well, I think what got me interested was my own inquiry for purpose. I was just like, since I'm a child, I was very curious about purpose. And I've been for the longest time just feeling like this strange being in this strange land where I didn't understand the rules. And I'm like, wait, why do I feel so foreign in this experience? Like, when I was a child, I used to cry a lot and say to my mom, Mom, I want to go home. And my mom would just be so confused. She's like, what are you talking about? And I would pack my bags because I was always having this really strong emotional reactions to how I felt. So it would be very common to just see me packing stuff. And my mom was like, where are you going? Like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm going home. And she's like, there's a problem. And I sometimes would take my bag if my mom wasn't paying attention, my dad wasn't home, and I would get out of the door and I would walk for blocks on end with a bag. And my mother, like, she once freaked out so bad, my dad went to fetch me on a car and was running around all the neighborhood looking for me. And finally he found me blocks away just with a bag walking and crying and telling them, I want to go home. And that was like, for them, it was so, you know, clear that something was like affecting me, but they didn't really know what it was. They didn't have the language nor the tools to understand what I was talking about. So I grew up with that sense of longing in a strange way. And in the way I saw the world, I was always kind of like, you know, in school, in university, I was very smart and people would look up to me. But at the same time, that would make me more of an outcast because everyone else was just like about having fun and enjoying themselves. And I'm like, I'm so curious. I want to understand everything. I'm always the one making questions. And the teacher is like, please don't make any other questions. We need to get on with this lesson. So, you know, it was an interesting experience in my childhood. So I feel like that was what kind of put me into this quest of like, okay, what is the meaning of me being here? What is the purpose of me being here? And feeling this connection with everything around me. I loved being in nature. I loved playing out. I loved climbing trees. And dancing was something that I like, I had a talent for. People would see me dancing and they would stop and they'd be like, there's something about this child moving that is so interesting. Like it would catch people's attention. And later on, I understood that was how spirit allowed me to communicate with the world through movement. And that was my own language. Me and spirit had our own language, right? And so it's, that's what kind of like prompted me into this journey of being, of creating a whole nother, you know, a framework that offers people a whole nother perspective of the world and how they see themselves in the world and how the world and them is, you know, it's oneness. Everything around us is one. That's basically how it was. Mm-hmm. My curiosity for belonging, I would say. That's mm-hmm. the long winded answer.
And so you eventually came into creating the Aluna Method. Would you be able to illuminate us on what the Aluna Method is? And I know that there's a lot of moving pieces and it's probably ever evolving. I'd love to hear, you know, in its current evolution, what it is for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely a living, breathing entity. It has its own life. I have to learn with it, from it, and with it at every iteration. And it surprises me because it's like sometimes I'm teaching class and there's information that comes through me and I'm like, wait, I've never said this before or I've never read this anywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, it just like is coming through me and I'm open and accepting. And the way it hits when it, you know, comes out of me and it reflects in other people, it's like so profound. So I'm like, okay, I accept that this is a living, breathing entity and I'm just the vehicle for this entity to express itself. The Aluna Method is a framework for self-awareness and self-development through Yoruba ancestral lunar wisdom. What does that mean? It means that it gives you a lunar map to track your emotional experience according to the lunar calendar and your own inner moon. And it gives you perspective. It gives you perspective of how you live in the world, what kind of time, space, framework you are adopting. And if that framework is not working for you anymore, it offers you an alternative that is connected to your own inner cycles. And it makes you the agent of your experience, right? You embody your experience through this knowledge of self. That is basically what the Aluna method is. It connects you back to your ancestry, your ancestral wisdom. It connects you to your body. It connects you to your tides, which are, you know, this ebbs and flows of input that the universe is constantly giving us. And it allows for us to come home, you know, come home and feel home, feel good at home, understand that home is accessible, is full, and we're not alone in that home. We have so much support of all of this beautiful ancestors that are, you know, eager to support us in this journey, as well as all the other beings that are supporting us to remember who we are and transform this earth in ways that are beneficial for every being that inhabits it.
I was just thinking of you as a little girl finding her way back home. And, you know, some of the elements that there's so such a richness here. And like, I want to talk about all the things. But one of the first things that's standing out to me is the Brazilian Yoruba philosophy and tradition. And my understanding of some of the components or elements of Yoruba is only through my family's from Puerto Rico. And so like Santeria. So there's like, you know, a lot of elements that are coming in from the Yoruba tradition. And so I'm only familiar with some of like the orishas or the goddesses, but I'm curious, what is the Brazilian Yoruba philosophy? How does this weave into your work?
Well, it's basically the same, right? The Yoruba philosophy is it's a perspective, right? Ancestral perspective of the world, how our ancestors saw the world, the cosmology in the cosmogony of how they lived and they experienced self and therefore experienced everything around them. The orishas are the deities, the spiritual embodiment of nature's energies, right? So of course, as a nation of humans, they needed to personify those energies. They needed to personify nature in order to explain their whole cosmology, their whole vision of the world. So they created this embodied nature expressions, right? Oshun being the goddess of sweet waters and fertility, and Iemanjá being the goddess of the ocean and the mother of all Ori, all heads. Xangô being the god of fire. You know, there's so many orishas that are all connected to this elemental forces of our planet, because they understood that every human being embodies those qualities. So we needed to name them. We needed to connect with them at a human level in order to relate to them fully. So that is the, you know, the Brazilian Yoruba philosophy comes from exactly the same one that traveled to Puerto Rico, which is Santeria in Puerto Rico, and in Brazil is Candomblé, which are very similar, just variations of that understanding of the world. Now, what we want to understand here is that African people didn't see, you know, especially when you look at philosophy, when you look at mythology, they didn't see spirituality as a separate thing. Spirituality was embedded into everything they did, right? If you're eating, that is highly spiritual. If you're speaking to a family member, there's a spiritual responsibility there as well. Everything in the community and everything you do as a human has a spiritual connotation and implications. So that the more we understand that, the easiest it is for us to see the world through that lens. Now, even science for them, you know, is based on consulting an oracle, on understanding what are the formations of combinations in odus, which are like the energetic imprints of a human being, right? And how does that expresses itself when it's in contact with everything else around that person, and how to get that into balance. That is their science, right? Is to bring a person into a holistic understanding of well-being. And so it's interesting because when I look at the world today and I see all of the spiritual practices out in the wellness world, I see a lot of beauty, but I also see a lot of neglect. And neglect because we adopted yoga, we adopted Buddhism, we adopted all these philosophies that are beautiful and ancient and so rich, but we haven't yet adopted any African philosophy consciously. Because even if we think about, you know, modern mysticism, it's imbued in modern mysticism is Egyptian, you know, spirituality technology, right? Hermeticism is imbued in all of the spiritual concepts that are out there in the world today. So, but that is like basically undercover African information in there. But consciously, we never really see people embracing that kind of spirituality and looking at it as like, wow, this is something I can learn from. This is something I can relate to. This is something that I can draw inspiration and knowledge from, because it's made by people and interpreted by people that added so much value in society, right? And that is a political stance in my spiritual practice. I'm like, I want my ancestors to be fully revered and honored in their wisdom, in their contribution to humanity's, the fabric of humanity, right? Without losing the reverence, the celebration of my culture. So that's why I decided to use Yoruba, Brazilian Yoruba mythology to teach my methodology.
Hmm. So important. And, you know, you're touching in on a lot of things here, like this vast erasure of peoples and cultures and also co-opting. And, you know, I think what a lot of the sort of modern wellness or, you know, modern spirituality movements, a lot of them taking components and elements from various cultures. And so it's a really interesting time, because I feel like there is a lot, especially I think over the past couple of years, a lot arising to the surface, like almost like the ancestors are like, hello,
yeah, they are.
Here we are.
We really are.
Yeah. And so I'd love to actually go into your journey of connecting with your ancestors. You mentioned in your bio that you took a trip to reconnect with your ancestral roots. How did that unfold and connects with the Aluna method?
Well, that was the reason why the Aluna method was actually born, right? Because I was called to go on this trip to Nigeria through this project called Brazil DNA Africa. And it was at the time, I had no clue. I was just like so hyped that I had to do a trip to the African continent because that's my favorite thing to do. And I was just like hype about it. And when I found out that I was actually kind of like going through an initiation process, I was like, wait a minute. Like, what just happened? This caught me off guard. You know, it was really about finding that purpose in that initiation trip through this project, going to arriving there, learning about my ancestry, crying during, you know, the whole trip took me to different places around Nigeria when we went to Badagry in Lagos, I was so touched because that's where my enslaved ancestors were kept captive in this huge compound where they had people packed up and they exchanged people for like umbrellas and bottles filled of liquor. You know, like they would have 40 people packed up in this tiny, tiny room, and you could give an umbrella for like 40 people. I bawled crying. Like I was feeling such just grief for so many of the lives of my people that were sacrificed and were tortured in the process of slavery. And then there's the trip is a trip. Like, how would you put people in this crazy looking ship thing and laid them down in a way where they would literally have no dignity and be in on like the vast ocean for months on end to get to, you know, this like this other continent and oppress them and enslave them? And it was just like so many layers of grief. And so when I finally went through all of that, I was just like, you know what? This is my legacy. My legacy is to find this stories of my people, the stories that made it through all of that. Sorry for my clarity on this, all of that shit. And you like just enlighten that as a way of honoring their lives, honoring their sweat, honoring their tears, honoring every single life that was sacrificed during that horrible period and created so much suffering and so much injustice in our world. Today, we're still, you know, reverberating the same energy as today. So this is my manifesto, right? This is my way of like saying, I am honoring you, my people, my ancestors, my guardians, the ones that carried this wisdom with you through so much suffering and delivered that wisdom, which helped, you know, build an entire society, an entire country. And so here I am today paying back. The work I do is fully in service of my ancestors. I'm paying back every single tear that they shed in that process of dehumanization. And I'm rebuilding their narrative because, you know, through the moon, you look at time and space in a different way. The linearity of things is completely shattered when you look at it from a moon or a lunar perspective. The moon is cyclical, and her way of expressing time space is by collapsing past, present, and future together. So if I'm able to use that understanding and connect it to this ancestral reckoning, ancestral healing, ancestral remembering, right, I am fully integrating and bridging that gap that had been forged by that separation. So that's why I do what I do.
I am hearing people listening in and feeling like they don't feel fully connected to their ancestors. And I know that I've heard from a lot of people who have reached in from the podcast or my clients that they desire to build a relationship and reconnect. What would you have to say to those people?
It's possible. and it's necessary. We are being called to reclaim those relationships and those narratives now. Every single person on this planet has, you know, work to do in that regard. And I want to clarify this whole thing with ancestors, because, you know, if you're a white person or someone that recognizes that your ancestors were, you know, people that damaged a lot of society and in their actions and the way they behaved in their and they moved through life, and you're scared to go there, scared to dig in there, well, that is the actual work, right? When we talk about forgiveness, when we talk about compassion, when we talk about empathy, it's not, oh yeah, I have empathy towards, you know, my friends because whatever. It's like, do you have empathy towards your own blood, your own people that actually created a lot of the instability that we're experiencing today? Are you able to see yourself as a continuation of that process and then shift the energy in order to become a creator of justice, a creator of harmony, a creator of awareness, right? By owning those wounds and really sitting with them. And then, you know, accessing your ancestors, because in Yoruba culture, you only become an ancestor if you have, as a living being, contributed to society, to your community, with your gifts, with your acts of service, with your integrity, you know, Iwa Pele, Iwa Rere, the path of good character, full of integrity. I don't even want to use the word good because that is very, it's polarizing language, but integrity, you know, and full responsibility for your service in this earth. So you only become an ancestor if you walked that path in integrity. And then you are remembered, you are revered, people in the community acknowledge you as that force that, like, just gave so much, you know, and helped so much in the advancement of that communal structure. Now, the people that are not really owning their power, they don't become ancestors, because people don't want to remember someone that didn't serve in integrity to the community. Someone that just wasted their precious time given to them in this earth. So, you know, this is how we see ancestry. We don't see ancestry as like, oh yeah, everything bad, every bad person in my lineage is now, you know, punishing me. This is not how we see it. It's like, no, I know that I can look back and I sing praises to specific people of my lineage, and they teach me how to be a better human, a more compassionate human every single day. So if you want to connect to your ancestors, you must realize that first. It's like, not everyone is an ancestor in your lineage. And then you must also come to terms with your perspective on ancestry and what trauma you carry from that ancestry. And then the work is to, you know, undo that at a daily basis. This is why the moon is so important, because she's giving you the opportunity to integrate those shadows and the light and bring healing into your experience.
I'm feeling how the moon is like this, it's like this force and presence in in our relationship with ourselves and our ancestors and like, and time space within us.
Yeah.
And then my mind goes to our physical bodies and mm-hmm. how the moon connects to our physical bodies. I love to talk about the power of our periods. And this is top of mind for me because I'm about to get my period. And I've had a very challenging experience throughout my life, especially in my early, childhood and early adulthood with my period. And I see so many clients, women who have struggled. And, you know, we see in society, obviously, how the way that it's talked about and, you know, even the types of products that are available and the way that gynecologists talk about things, it seems so disconnected from, you know, the way that I feel like you speak into it. So yeah, what is the power of our periods?
Well, the power of our periods is to regenerate our experience in this planet, like to remember that we are fully capable of healing, of creating life, of feeding the earth, feeding ourselves, nurturing our community, making space and letting go of what is not, you know, in alignment with who we are or how we move. She is the ultimate decolonization teacher.
Tell me more about that.
She really is, because, you know, why do you think the periods have been so demonized throughout history, right? Like every man, like, is terrified when even us women, we're terrified of our period, right? When we first get it, it's almost like a shock. It's a shock on your system. And we have no information around it. Some of us are lucky enough that to have a mother that is, you know, a bit more sensitive or in tune, that gives you a prep around it. But most of us are just like, here, there's the pad. Now you can get pregnant, so you're not gonna go out and stay late anymore. You can't play in no boy's house, and all of a sudden your freedom is gone, and you're like, wait, what? I was free to explore and to run around and to play with whoever I wanted, and now I have this thing that grounds me and limits me from the full expression of my joy. Right. This is, and then it comes with a lot of pain as well. It's uncomfortable and it's messy. So how is it that, you know, we will love this thing if we haven't had anything, any structure in society that actually fosters empathy towards it, fosters, you know, okay, let me look at it from a different angle. Our periods are the way that our bodies found to help us recycle all of this debris that of energy, of emotional, you know, density that the entire grid of humanity shares. This is why we feel so much pain, because so there's a scientific explanation to this. When we are born, when we are in our mother's womb, right, at 5 months old, more or less, we start to develop this little cell called the follicle. And the follicle is filled with every single egg that we will ever produce throughout our whole lives. We already are born with this little, you know, pouch with all these eggs inside. So at 5 months old, I have that being developed in my uterus. That means that when I'm in my mom's belly, I already have the possibility of life within me, of my future children, of the ones that are going to keep continuing the lineage of my, you know, of my genealogical tree. Now, if I had that at 5 months old in my mom's belly, that means that I was an egg at my, in my mom's belly at 5 months old when she was in my grandmother's belly. And this goes back and back and back into the, you know, the beginning of time. The X chromosome can be traced down almost like an ancestral map. You can trace down, breaking it down into a mathematical structure, which goes into the whole Fibonacci thing. It can be traced back into time so far that you find the first woman that was ever present in your lineage through that information, through that genetical information. So imagine the amount of data that we carry in that follicle, because all of the emotional states that my mom is going through when she has me in her belly are being encoded into that little, you know, data collector called the follicle. And that also includes the information that came before her. So when that follicle breaks for the first time and that one egg, you know, in our first menstruation is dropped into our uterus, that is all of that ancestral information being released all at once. It's like a nuclear bomb almost. That's why it's so painful, because you're like, wait a minute, I'm accessing all of this trauma and I don't even know what to do with it. And your uterus is like, don't worry, this is just our way of clearing the trauma, but you have to be aware of it. If you love it, embrace it, and respect it, that is actually an organic clearing that happens every month. And you're like, oh, okay, great. And if the possibility of life actually manifests, it's even greater, because what you're doing is you have cleared so much debris from your, you know, from that database, that genealogical database, that when you create a new human, this other human is more likely to be, you know, a beam of light in the evolution process, because there's a lot of it is intentional. A lot of it is, you know, geared towards, okay, now I can teach you about this. Now I can tell you, hey, this, if you're a boy, you know, this is how you respect your nature. You respect the nature of humanness, of women, of animals, of nature itself. If you're a girl, wow, this is how you honor your cycles, right? You start to see the potentiality to educate this new generation in a whole new way. So this is what our periods are telling us. It's like, hey, you have an opportunity to liberate yourselves from the trauma and the future generations as well, only if you pay attention to yourself and honor your cycles, honor what that strong pain is trying to tell you, because there are so many aspects of it that are trying to just bring you back to the place of love, but you're not able to see it because you deny it and you like run away from it. And society is like, no, it's nasty, it's dirty, don't go there, right?
You know, I'm thinking about so many women today, and actually this month, I didn't know this. I don't really pay attention to, you know, like what theme of the month is it in terms of health, but it's endometriosis month. Mm-hmm. And in the time that we're recording this, and I know
because it's women's month. Imagine.
And there are so many women that I know, that I work with, that have endometriosis or presumed endometriosis, or just, you know, a lot of gynecological issues. And so their relationship to their period, to their reproductive cycle and power is very complicated, right? Mm-hmm. What are some of the ways for those who are experiencing those extra challenges and even any insight around something like, you know, these growths or the tissue, do you have for these women and, you know, to kind of come into a different type of relationship with that?
Well, you know, the endometrium is the lining of our uterus that expresses itself when, you know, we're receiving that egg. It starts to like get more, I would say more like, it's a tissue, right? It's like, it starts to get like juicy when that egg comes in, and it almost like receives the egg and holds space for the egg. Now, when that tissue outgrows and it needs to attach to other organs, and it causes pain and it causes constipation and it causes discomfort, let's think about it from that emotional lunar perspective, right? Why is it that we're holding on to so much that instead of this tissue like embracing a potentiality of life, it has to hold on to organs and the walls of your you know inner linings and rip all of that apart in order to feed itself? Mm-hmm. It's almost as if we are creating a monster that eats flesh. It eats what we are, you know, suppressing. It's so scary to think about how much hate we've been educated to withstand for ourselves. Like, it's like, I hate myself so much. I hate this period situation so much. And I don't allow it to do its organic thing. And because of all of that heavy, suppressed emotional charge, my uterus is receiving information, and it's, you know, the linings of it are just like out of control. And I'm, you know, as a human, I'm like, I know how much how intelligent my body is. It's the most premium ancestral technology that we have is this body of ours. Every cell has a purpose. Everything in it is connected, and it's working in harmony and unison for health to happen. So if I am seeing that in my uterus, in that specific place where the emotional body is being so, you know, it's so present, and I see that my linings are like taking over other organs, that means that I'm holding on to too much. I am internalizing and suppressing too much. And my body is just telling me, hey, this is not the way to do this. Look at what it actually can cause. It's out of control. You need to learn a different way, right? And the more, you know, science is all over the place with it because they don't know where it comes from. They don't have enough research. Now maybe they're doing more research because all of the celebrities have come out in the, you know, in the open to say, oh, you know, I worked so hard my whole career, and then all of a sudden I was on set and I had this crazy pain and I fainted, and then they rushed me to the hospital and they found out I had endometriosis and it was literally taking over my entire body. So, you know, if you take the data, if you take the women that have been experiencing this and compare their what they're saying about how they felt when they, you know, when they found out about this disease, you will see that it's very similar. It's hardworking, high achieving women that are not allowed to express their emotional states because of whatever it is, right? And they end up falling into this imbalance. So I think there's a lot there for us to, you know, to examine as people that are willing to heal, people that are willing to embrace a whole nother way of life. And for sure, diet has a lot to do with it. You know, how toxic your environment is in terms of, you know, your relationships and how you, you know, where you are as a woman, if you're a Black woman, if you are an Asian woman, if you're a white woman, like all of that is definitely influencing. But the most influential aspect of this common disease is that we are not respecting our cycles, and we hate ourselves for having a cycle.
You know, I think a lot of what you're speaking into as well is us getting really honest with ourselves, like creating the space to look at all of that. Because I can even just feel the resistance from a lot of people of like, you know, kind of owning into what has been going on, our role in this process, and that it's not all our fault, right? It's not about blaming ourselves, but it, again, it takes radical honesty to look at ourselves and to say, as you were saying, to choose a different way, a different perspective, and healing, which could mean radical shifts in your life.
Yeah.
So that's very big and very powerful. And I would love to ground it into, you know, what are some first, maybe simple practices or steps for people to harness their menstrual cycle, the power of their periods? Is there a favorite tool or practice of yours?
My practice is the Aluna method, and I'm so lucky to have discovered this method early in my life, because now I am, you know, I have a very good relationship with my cycles, and I have no, how do you call this? No imbalance whatsoever. Like, I haven't experienced a painful period in a long time. My PMS symptoms are very easy. I know when I'm feeling them, and I know how they feel, what they feel like. So I'm able to communicate that to whoever is around me. I'm like, hey, I need you to be gentle today. Like, or hey, I'm not going to be communicating so much today. I need a bit more of a quiet place, a quiet space for myself. That sovereignty is so healing, right? Because that's what we have been striped off as women. We've been, how do you call this? Taken away, like that sovereignty has been taken away from us, right? The fact that we can actually express this and say, hey, I'm not coming in today. I'm not going to this meeting today. Today, I need to stay with myself. Would you mind handling this for me? This is what you need in order to handle that. I'm going to take this day off. That shit is so powerful in today's society that people are not ready for it. So, you know, I would say get into a daily practice of listening to yourself and really honoring what you see. And it's not always possible. You know, we live in a very fast-paced society that demands a lot of us, especially if you have a family, especially if you are a higher achieving person. But really give yourself the grace of observation. Find time to observe how you feel that day. What is the overall emotional states that you are entertaining, and take notes. Really, that's simple. Take notes so you can actually allow yourself to feel those feelings and say, oh, I give myself permission to feel this way today, right? I would say that's an amazing practice. And if you want to dive deeper in it, just come and learn the Aluna method. I'm here to serve. All of this information, it's just, you know, learning from what I received from the ancestors. So I'm ready to just share it with whoever is ready to receive it.
I love it. Well, for those who are interested in diving deeper with you, what is the best way for them to get in contact with you and your work? Do you have anything mm-hmm. coming up? And this will be coming out in April.
Yes, I do. I have a new class coming up in April and May. We've been doing a full 3 months course of understanding. It's a 3 parts course, and each month is 1 part of understanding what is the difference between lunar and solar energy. How do you connect to yourself and honor your inner cycles and use your period as a, you know, as a tool for self-love and self-knowledge and self-development. The second part is coming up in April, and the third part is coming up in May. And you can always work with me in 101 if you don't feel like doing the group class and you want something more focused, more specific, please come through. I'm super accessible, and I'll definitely, you know, do my best to support you in your journey of remembering.
Beautiful. Well, I can't let you go until you answer this one last question that I have that I ask everybody who comes on the podcast, and that's, what is currently feeding your wild, whether that's body, mind, or soul right now?
Currently, what's feeding my wild is getting back into my movement practice and being more into my body, accepting that is part of, you know, my calling and just leaning into it more often. That's what's feeding my wild right now. Wild dances and embodiment of all the things that need to express themselves through me.
And I highly recommend everybody to check out your Instagram page, where you demonstrate some of your amazingly beautiful moves on the pole. And I just, like, I want a pole in my place. That's incredible. Yes. I get so excited. So yeah, everybody needs to go check that out. And oh my gosh, there's so much beauty in this. I appreciate you and your work and your service to the world and to your ancestors. So thank you for what you do.
Thank you so much for having me here. Thank you, everyone, for listening. If you resonated with anything or you want to chat about any of these things, please don't hesitate to reach out. And also, don't take my words for a word of an expert, because this is just me learning and sharing what I'm learning. And tomorrow I might change my mind. So that's just the nature of being human. Thank you so much.
Hey there, I made something for you. One of the biggest challenges that I hear from people is that they are feeling stuck when it comes to their health. You're a smart, capable, and creative change maker, right? And you know what you should be doing for your health. So what gives? Well, it's not about willpower. And I wanted to create something that would help you to unlearn the things that are keeping you stuck so that you can get out of your own way and master the mindset of health. That's why I created Wildly Unstuck, where you'll learn the top 5 things that I have found to sabotage your health goals and what to do about them. You'll learn what it really takes to become committed and unstoppable when it comes to your health goals, and find the clarity you've been looking for so you know exactly what to do to get back into alignment. And I made it totally free. So if this is something that you want to dive into and create a vision and soul goals for your health and your life and bring your gifts to the world, because we know that we need it, then I invite you to join us in Wildly Unstuck. You can find that at wildlyrooted.com/unstuck. I'll see you on the other side.